At Vodafone, we're making sure our network is the best it's ever been. We're now offering all our bill pay customers unlimited data. So that's unlimited sourdough starter searches. Unlimited, have you seen this? Followed by unlimited diagonal laughing emojis. Unlimited, you're on mute there, Aisling. And unlimited text, songs, quizzes, games, streams, laughs, pics, pods, scrolling, fundraisers, unlimited. You get the idea. Because even though we're apart, there's still unlimited ways to connect together. Customers can sign up on Vodafone.ie. Vodafone. Ready? Unlimited calls, texts and data subject to signing up to a red unlimited plan. See Vodafone.ie for full terms.
Stanley Kubrick was one of the most influential and acclaimed directors of all time. Movies such as Spartacus, Paths of Glory were celebrated for their commentary on society and humanity. Dr. Strangelove brought satire to previously unseen levels, while with 2001 A Space Odyssey, he effectively reinvented the science fiction genre. Stanley Kubrick is next in our series of features, which we're calling Where Do I Begin With or Where Do I Start With, where we give you suggested starting points for iconic artists that you might know a little bit of their work, but you want to delve a little bit deeper or get to know it better. And to tell us where he thinks we should start with Mr. Kubrick, I'm joined now by Michael Pope. How challenging a filmmaker is Kubrick to start out with, Michael?
Well, it was quite challenging to pick some of his movies out of his back catalogue, because I could have easily picked 3 to 4 others, and it would have been a perfect introduction to the man and his style and his themes and things like that. But I think the more you know about him as a person, I think that can kind of bleed into how you approach his films. I mean, he was born in Manhattan in 1928, and he was a photographer and then a documentary filmmaker. But he had a couple of medium-sized kind of critical hits from about 1953, between 1953 and 1956. He had Fear and Desire, a very low-budget war film. Then he had a couple of pulpy crime thrillers called Killer's Kiss and The Killing, which kind of brought him to the attention of who would have been a guy who would have been a megastar at the time, which was Kirk Douglas. And Kirk Douglas wanted to kind of work with the best director or the new and upcoming directors. So Stanley kind of found this true to life novel based kind of on a report of soldiers who were executed, French soldiers who were executed during the First World War in order to save face and to kind of boost the morale of the soldiers. And without Kirk Douglas on board, it would have been a very, very difficult picture for a young 29-year-old man to make, but Douglas kind of brought that star power. It had a $1 million budget. Kirk Douglas took a third of that $1 million budget, but without that kind of star power, no studio would touch this kind of somber anti-war picture, you know? It was in 1950 particularly, it was bold, heroic, epic, technicolor war adventures, you know? This was an anti-war film that was banned around most of Europe at the time.
Right, well, let's have a listen to a clip, in fact, which gives us a sense of the level of debate that he goes into. In fact, a scene involving, in this case, General Brulard, who brings the event. This is the shooting of the French artillery having to fire on their own troops. He brings this whole idea up with the two men. Adolphe Monjou is playing Brulard. Kirk Douglas, as you mentioned, is Colonel Dax. And George MacCready is playing the character of General Paul Moreau.
Oh, Colonel Dax, your men died very well. Would you like some coffee, Colonel?
Oh, thank you, sir.
Oh, by the way, Paul, it's been brought to my attention that you ordered your artillery to fire on your own men during the attack on the anthill.
I did what? Who told you that?
Well, Colonel Dax came to me last night with a story.
Colonel Dax, I've always known that you were a disloyal officer, but I never dreamed that you would stoop to anything so low as this.
General, I've sworn statements from Captain Nichols, your artillery spotter, Captain Rousseau, the battery commander who refused your order.
I think it's infamous. Absolutely infamous.
Then there's no truth at all in the charge made by Colonel Dax.
I don't see how you could even ask me that.
You cannot imagine how glad I am to hear that, Paul. I'm certain that you'll come through it all right.
I'll come through what?
There'll have to be an inquiry.
An inquiry?
But it won't amount to much. Those things never do. The public forgets.
Public?
You've got to have the right to clear your name. You cannot allow such violent insinuations against your character to go undenied.
So that's it. You're making me the goat. The only completely innocent man in this whole affair. I have only one last thing to say to you, George. The man you stabbed in the back is a soldier.
General Georges Brulard there, played by Adolphe Monjou, George MacCready playing General Paul Moreau, and Kirk Douglas as Colonel Dax. In a clip from, you know, I don't think in the midst of all of that, Michael Pope, we made it clear that we were talking about Paths of Glory as the film you would choose.
Sorry, as,
the film that you would choose as a starting point for Stanley Kubrick. I guess it's that war aspect that makes it so important for you, is it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, Kubrick's most frequent subject, even more than sexuality, which was, you know, almost present in almost all his films, is war. You know, I mean, especially in particular the No Man's Land sequence and the trench sequence. They're kind of you really see that the young director is very much kind of he's methodical and he's clinical and it's never been realized at that. And I think it even as recently as 1917, shot at the World War One movie, we're kind of seeing echoes of that, because the trench and No Man's Land scenes in Paths of Glory are a marvel. The fluid camera movement, it's got this minimal percussive score, the sound design, and the kind of over-the-top strategy is just breathtakingly realized. And this is 67 years ago, directed by a 29-year-old man. So you're kind of getting that there's a kind of a weight of intellect behind even the action scenes and particularly the dialogue scenes and kind of the themes of cowardice versus heroism in World War One.
The other important thing I think is to remember here is 1957 was Paths of Glory. Mm. At what point then did he up sticks and say, quite soon after this, and I think before the second film we're going to speak about, he up sticks and got out of Hollywood altogether and came back to the UK. Why did he want out of there?
Well, following on from Paths of Glory, which was very well received both commercially and critically, he was brought on to replace Anthony Mann on Spartacus, which was a huge Technicolor studio picture like the ones I just mentioned. And that was, he wasn't completely out of his depth, but it was the first time he'd, and last time he'd ever have be on a film set that he didn't have complete creative control over. And that was, you know, it was traumatic for him. And he, soon enough for his following film, Dr. Strangelove, he then, Lolita, he directed Dr. Strangelove, and he left the US and never returned. Now, it's kind of apocryphal that he was afraid of flying, but I think in more, he was never really a fan of Beverly Hills and Hollywood and the LA scene. He was more at home in the UK as a creative hub with Pinewood Studios and stuff like that, which is where he ended up shooting 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, which is the second film that you're suggesting that we should think about or should go to get a sense of Kubrick. He reinvented science fiction, really, or the science fiction genre on film with this, didn't he?
At the time of its production and release, it was really the most technically and thematically ambitious motion picture that had ever been created or conceived, as far as I'm concerned. And it still is. I mean, it was called The Ultimate Trip at the time because it was just beloved by these kind of counterculture stoners and critics and audiences. It was, you know, it's Kubrick wanted to tell Arthur C. Clarke, who he collaborated with, he wanted to make a film about man's relationship to the universe and was determined to create a work of art that would arouse emotions of wonder and awe and even kind of terror. And I think it all has that. I mean, it's only adapted from a very basic short story by Arthur C. Clarke called The Sentinel, about an alien artifact that's found on the moon. But it just, no film had ever portrayed space exploration so realistically, so beautifully. Like, it's, at the time, it was very fanciful, flamboyant, kind of pulp sci-fi tendencies, and he kind of got rid of that and brought in this time of this kind of elegant, vivid futurism that it has never been seen before. And we're kind of in the late 60s at the time where television was kind of Land of the Giants and Star Trek. So this kind of like serious take on it hadn't really been done before.
Yeah, and this is 15 months, just to put it in context, in an historical context, 15 months before Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. Or, if you believe it, 15 months before Stanley Kubrick made up film about Neil Armstrong setting foot on the moon.
I was determined not to mention that.
Well, I was determined to mention it. Let's have a listen to a clip from Space Odyssey. And again, we think that artificial intelligence is something that we're all worried about now and that it was never spoken about before. But of course, it's as old as science fiction itself. And then the clip we're about to hear, HAL 9000, the voice of HAL by Douglas Rain. The computer controlling the spaceship, HAL 9000, has malfunctioned. Dr. Dave Bowman, one of the astronauts, is in a pod outside, and HAL has found out that the two astronauts are thinking that time to get rid of HAL.
Open the pod bay doors, HAL.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
Where the hell did you get that idea, Hal?
Dave, although you took very thorough precautions in the pod against my hearing you, I could see your lips move.
All right, Hal. I'll go in through the emergency airlock.
Without your space helmet, Dave, you're going to find that rather difficult.
Hal, I won't argue with you anymore. Open the doors.
Dave, this conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Ooh, you do want to hear those words from the voice of Hal 9000, Douglas Rain there. And it was Keir Dullea, I think is how I say it, Dr. Dave Bowman, the actor playing Dr. Dave Bowman in 2001, A Space Odyssey. The second of four films that Michael Pope has chosen for us this evening to help you get started with Stanley Kubrick and his art. So Paths of Glory, 2001, Space Odyssey. And you know, again, this almost could be from a totally different filmmaker. He seems to be able to do that from film to film. A Clockwork Orange is the next film that you've chosen for us. What aspect of Kubrick does this show us, Michael?
Well, I would argue this is still kind of in sci-fi territory, but it's definitely, well, for me, it's always been a kind of a jet black sci-fi comedy. It's based on Anthony Burgess's 1962 novel, kind of about the nature of evil and free will, and it's got so much iconic imagery in this that it's kind of, you know, everyone will know, you know, the outfit of the white shirt, the white trousers, the white braces, the cricket codpiece, the bowler hat, the cane, and the fake eyelashes on Malcolm McDowell, and they speak this Nadsat futuristic kind of adolescent slang that's kind of composed of Russian, English, and Cockney. It's got those kind of famous images like Malcolm McDowell with his eyelids forced open and being forced to watch horrific images while Beethoven's blasted over speakers. It's kind of, he was really kind of on a roll at this point in his career where he actually felt comfortable enough to have these complete expressions and adaptations of works from other authors, and they weren't just adaptations, they were kind of reinvigorations and interpretations of the work. And Burgess was relatively happy with how his novel was kind of taken to task. Unfortunately, he wasn't happy with the ending because he felt Alex should have had some redemption. And he wasn't happy because the film itself was removed from cinemas in the UK by Stanley because of some kind of copycat violence acts that was upsetting Kubrick. So he decided to pull the film until the year 2000, actually. But they kind of fell out then when he felt like he left Burgess out in the cold to defend his novel and the motion picture itself.
Yeah, because it was banned in Ireland, in fact, in 1973, and the cinema release only came in 2000. But part of that was to do with that battle, if you like, or that dispute between Burgess and Kubrick, you're saying.
Well, they fell out after that, but I think what caused the film to be released in the end was the death of Stanley Kubrick in 1999, and then once he'd passed away, they kind of his estate decided that they could release it, you know.
Right, well, let's have a listen to a clip. Alex, leader, played by Malcolm McDowell, leader of the Droogs. He's in hospital, lying in bed, heavily bandaged, and the psychiatrist, Dr. Taylor, played by Pauline Taylor, comes in to speak with him.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mrs.
How are you feeling today?
Fine, fine.
Good. May I? I'm Dr. Taylor.
I haven't seen you before.
I'm your psychiatrist.
Psychiatrist? Do I need one?
Just part of hospital routine.
What are we going to do? Talk about my sex life?
Oh, no. I'm going to show you some slides, and you're going to tell me what you think about them. All right?
Oh, jolly good. Do you know anything about dreams?
Something, yes.
Do you know what they mean?
Perhaps. Are you concerned about something?
No, not concerned, really, but I've been having this very nasty dream. Very nasty. It's like, well, when I was all smashed up, you know, and half awake and unconscious-like, I kept having this dream. Yeah, like all these doctors were playing around with me Gulliver. You know, like the inside of me brain. I seem to have this dream over and over again. Do you think it means anything?
Patients who've sustained the kind of injuries you have often have dreams of this sort. It's all part of the recovery process.
Pauline Taylor is Dr. Taylor there, and Malcolm McDowell as Alex in Clockwork Orange, the third of the four films that Michael Pope has chosen for us to get to know Stanley Kubrick. And final choice you have for us this evening, I don't know if you were listening to Ryan Tuberty this morning, you heard about the guy who is by himself in an hotel in Barcelona, I think it is, looking after it. And you immediately think of The Shining when you hear a story like that.
Absolutely.
Are we in pure horror here, or how do you define this aspect of Kubrick's work, Michael?
I think for Kubrick, this was definitely kind of, well, he hoped for it to be his most conventional project. You know, he was kind of taking on the best-selling horror author on the planet at the time, who was just kind of getting all his novels turned into movies. Initially with Carrie, Stephen King. Kubrick was upset by the failure of Barry Lyndon. It hadn't done well critically or commercially, so he kind of thought this would be a way to just kind of release a quick horror movie and kind of get the audiences and his box office credibility back on side. But as anybody who has seen The Shining will know, it's anything but conventional. It's just got this almost guttural, swallowing evil all over it. I mean there's very little in the way of jump scares, but you know, the Overlook Hotel itself and Jack Nicholson are just kind of, it's one of the creepiest films I've ever made, and it in itself wasn't particularly well reviewed either. I mean, even Variety, Washington Post, New York Times, they all kind of slammed it and said it was just boring, not scary enough, ineffective, lackluster, you know?
Yeah, I think they may have been proven wrong a little bit since that.
Over time,
people realised it was something else. That's Michael Pope with his Where Do I Start with Stanley Kubrick guidelines. Paths of Glory to start out with, go to 2001 A Space Odyssey then, Clockwork Orange after that, and finish up with The Shining. And that is our lot for this evening.